We have the power to change our lives, but it's gonna take sacrifice. Life is like this, nothing is for free. Your time is precious, but so is love and peace. It's time to stand up on your feet, join the revolution in the streets for peace. Together as one, stand up on your feet, join the revolution in the streets for peace, together as one. Throw out the laundry list and start anew. Make love and peace the number one thing to do. I know it ain't easy, you gotta change your plans. But future generations will clap their hands. It's time to stand up on your feet, join the revolution in the streets for peace, together as one. Stand up on your feet, join the revolution in the streets for peace, together as one. What's it gonna take, people, to change the world? If you want it, you can get it, just take the time. What's it gonna take, people, to change the world?
All right, that's John Michael's son from his Love and Peace. This is Chris, the Peace and Justice Show. We are wondering what it's gonna take, and we are in the trenches with the activists and very grateful for the people we walk beside and hear about and love knowing. So anyway, today, I have exceptional guests on, and the reason is because we have a silent KZFR support show going on, and we'd love it if you would call, or most likely it's easier for you to just go to the KZFR website and press on the donate tab during the show today, which runs from 11:30 to 1. It's on every Friday with rotating hosts. Our first guest is Juan Aroha Sarinaña. And he is from the Chico Democratic Socialists, and I want to have him come on in a second, but I want to tell you that Corey Himpont, who is my co-host, is going to be speaking at 11:45, followed by a brief period with me at noon. And then our former mayor and city council person, Carl Ori, will be on at 12:15, followed by Jim Brobeck, a water analyst for Aqua Alliance, and then the last guest will be Emily Alma. She's with she's a coordinator with the Chico Concerned Citizens for Justice. So Juan Aroha Sarinaña, how are you today? Welcome to KZFR.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah,
I'm very well.
Yeah, I really appreciate getting to know you a little bit. Suddenly you were in my life, and you're a 16-year resident of Chico, though. You're a biology faculty member at CSU Chico and a member of the Chico DSA, or Democratic Socialists of America, Mutual Aid Group. And I'd like to know, first of all, what is DSA Mutual Aid? And just tell us all about your work.
Yes, I would love to. Well, DSA Mutual Aid is a group that started last year, right when the pandemic hit and lockdown happened. some members of Chico DSA decided that, you know, some people needed help. We started by making grocery deliveries to people. Mainly, we're trying to serve immunocompromised or elderly people who were at higher risk from contracting COVID and from, you know, dying from contracting COVID. So we began with that, but we also almost immediately began doing trash pickups at homeless encampments. We began delivering meals. That lasted for a while. Most recently, starting in November, we began what began as a cold weather support. The idea was that we're going into winter and people living in the streets needed cold weather gear, beanies, gloves, socks, sweaters. We began collecting item donations, clothes and things like that. We also began a GoFundMe campaign, which was very successful. And all winter, we visited the encampments that at the time there were several encampments, and we would rotate. The city has since swept most of these camps, of course, and to where we were left with just Comanche Creek. And for the recent months, since the TRO happened and all these things with the Corps happened, we've been serving Comanche Creek because that was the last camp left. And what we do is we bring out essential survival gear, things like toiletries, things like groceries, shelf-stable food that people can take and that they can, you know, maybe survive off of for a week or a few days. We bring also first aid supplies, and we still try to bring clothes, socks, and clean underwear. And now we've shifted from cold winter or cold weather clothes to now summer clothes like T-shirts and shorts. And we're out there every Saturday. Every Saturday, we've been doing this since November.
And, you know, I'm really impressed with all the things that you have done. And I know people appreciate it who are out on the creeks. And do you also go out to Tykert Ponds at all?
So we haven't, but we are. I mean, some of our members have brought that up to us. We know that people are out there. We haven't yet, but we are in talks to figure out how we can support people that are out at Tykert Ponds. We are aware that they need support as well. We hope to soon be able to get out there. It's a little bit tougher logistically for us because we have a whole setup that we bring out, tables and a canopy, and it's not very accessible. But those are just like little things that we need to figure out how to work around.
I'm grateful to hear that. And folks who might be trying to call, we can't take calls right now because we're actively in an interview, but you can call the station if you want. There's a pledge drive line. It's 601-340-KZFR. 5937 is the what that works out to, 601-340-5937. And I am on the line with Juan Araujo Sarinaña. And he is an activist with DSA, Democratic Socialists of America. He has done a lion's share of work out there. I've seen him many times, and I really appreciate everything you're doing. And so you're out there on Saturdays. Is this open to other people who would want to help?
Absolutely. It is open to other people. If anyone that's hearing us now wants to lend a hand in what we do, you're welcome to reach out to us. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just look up Chico DSA. Send us a message saying that you're interested in doing mutual aid work. But really, most importantly, if I can say anything today, is that you do not have to join us to do mutual aid work. There are needs out there. People need water. People need food. People need clothing. You don't have to join Chico DSA Mutual Aid to do mutual aid. If you want to do mutual aid, all you do is you gather things that people need and you go and you give them to the people that need them, mm-hmm. that need those things. That's all we do, essentially. And if I could have one huge takeaway from this interview is that more people need to involve themselves in mutual aid efforts that directly improve the material conditions of people living in the streets. And you don't have to join Chico DSA Mutual Aid or Chico Friends of the Street or any other group that is doing this type of work. Just gather some items and give them to the people.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's so key to all of this, because we don't have the benefit of governance. We don't have the benefit of a benign civilization that we're living in right now. Nothing is helping. These are people that are so marginalized that they are living in tents where it's 109 degrees with all kinds of health situations.
Yes.
People could die in this next
Absolutely.
Any day this week. And so it is.
Yes.
It's not just a kindness or some sort of hand-me-downs. It is our humanity crossing to another, do unto others sort
also,
of thing.
It's also not charity.
Yes.
Mutual aid is not charity. It is not organized in a hierarchical way as charity is. Mutual aid is it's solidarity. Mm. Solidarity with the people that are living on the streets in 109-degree weather, as you said. And absolutely, we do not have the benefit of a city council that cares about people. We need to let go of this idea that city council is going to somehow save us. I don't care much for advocating at city council or going to their meetings. They're not here to help us. We help each other. We need to help people organize ourselves into mutual aid networks. That is the way, in my opinion.
Yeah, it seems to be the only way. And so everyone within our voices, if you may not be able to do much, but you can at least financially support DSA so that they can buy material aid, and that's one way of supporting, or you can directly walk out there and people are so appreciative. You know, there is no risk to you. Absolutely. I can guarantee it. You sue me and you get hurt out there. So, first of all, tell us how to support DSA financially. And then for your last thing, I would like to ask you, please say why you support community radio.
So if you want to support Chico DSA financially, we do have a GoFundMe that is active, that is actively taking money, and that money goes directly to our bank account. We do have a bank account. That money is transferred directly to that bank account, and it is used exclusively to buy material needs that people require, like all those things that I have mentioned. And you can find that GoFundMe on Facebook, on Instagram. Once again, if you just look us up, Chico DSA is all you should need to look up, and you'll see our GoFundMe. We've made multiple posts advertising it, trying to get money to, or trying to get people to donate money to us. Another option would be to donate items. If you have toiletries or clothes that you want to donate, or you want to drop off some groceries that we can give hand out that week, that is also an option. Same deal, if you just look us up on Facebook or Instagram and you send us a message, we can be in contact with you and get those items to the people that need them.
All right, 30 seconds then for why you support community radio.
Why I support community radio? I support community, period. That is what I've been trying to talk about this whole time. Mutual aid is community radio. I support it because What we need is community. We need community unity. We need to build community unity. And community radio does just that.
Love it. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you, Juan Araujo. Sorry, Nanya, even if I screwed up your name. I appreciate you.
It's okay. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, have a great day, everyone.
All right. Peace to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Greetings, Shoshana here. Listen to the music we feature on KZFR. It's the most eclectic music mix on any radio station in the North State, with programs like my shows, Planet Waves and Roots and Culture, Devastation Sounds, Latin Brothers, Funky Reservation, Celt Radio, Island Rhythms, and Eve of Destruction that delve into musical genres other stations never play. We expose you to excellent music that the big stations are afraid to play. Stay fearless and support KZFR today. Visit kzfr.org/donate.
Okay, there we are. I'm sorry. So this is the Peace and Justice Show. I mentioned that before. My name is Chris. We are in a silent pledge drive, but I'm not ever going to be silent until my days are over. And I had a funny thought today. I don't know why I thought it, but I thought, oops, I want to die before the Dalai Lama. So there's a little peek into my internal life. My next guest is someone who I prize most validly, very strongly, Corey Hemphunt. He's my co-host on the Peace and Justice program. He programs on the first Friday of every month here on KZFR. He does it remotely because of COVID. We haven't been able to get him into the studio yet, but that is hopefully pending very soon. And Corey is a poet, and he is a prolific writer and thinker, a philosopher, I would say. And welcome to your own show. Hi, Corey.
Hey, Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm good. And you have been programming for a while now. I wanted to see if I could get some of your reflections about, say, what you do, how you do it, how much work goes into it, and what you value about it.
That's a lot. It's been an amazing journey. I thank you so much for just plucking me up and putting me into the seat. I kind of just dove head first, and I went and grabbed a little recorder. I had been interviewed by folks like yourself and Guillermo Mash, and just many people over the years at KZFR. And so that's where I kind of got my education, was just drawing from those experiences, being interviewed by you all. And I kind of just was been an imitator, I guess. But it's been an amazing journey, and really kind of spiritual is a lot of my, you know, as I do it once a month, you know, when the month begins, I really don't have an idea. And I just kind of call on spirit to draw me in a certain direction. And some of these episodes really have been powerful, and I've just been an honor to even be a part of them.
Yeah, it's, I know what you mean, that you meet the most amazing people, and you get to find out things that you never would have known unless you asked. And we don't ask a lot of times, you know, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? You know, simple things. Go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where I try to come at it from. You know, I don't try to be, you know what's really interesting, actually, as I've done a couple interviews recently after not having done any for a while and having been being the interviewer for a while, it's interesting coming back to the other side and remembering how difficult it can be to answer these questions that we're asking people just on the spot. And it really gives me just another found respect for the people who I'm just kind of walking up on. For example, the lady that I walked up on at the Palestinian protest they were having a couple weeks ago, as I'm listening back to that interview and just realizing that I'm just a random person and they didn't have any time to prepare or any notes to draw from, how people are just so powerful and brave to just jump up and share such important information with us. And they were able to give me, you know, several resources that I would never even had gotten had I not gotten up and just talked to somebody and listened.
Yeah, yeah. And that was an incredible interview. You know, I wanted to say happy Juneteenth to you. And I was wondering if you could tell our listeners your thoughts on the finally, the recognition of Juneteenth. And I had just one funny thing I thought of that I wanted to share is that we are now having a federal holiday for a federal failure to let the country know for 2 years and 8 months or whatever it was that the Civil War had ended and slavery was ended and people were free. I mean, this is what we're actually celebrating, is it not? Anyway, go ahead, Corey.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you mentioned of, you know, we're celebrating a failure, and it'll be interesting to see where this goes in the coming years. As, you know, experience tells us, Americans can be a little bit cringy with how they celebrate things and their lack of reverence for what the celebration is actually for. So I'm interested to see that, one. And then two, you know, you asked if I would be able to share my thoughts with listeners, and to an only a very minimal extent, I have so many thoughts on the idea, you know, of Juneteenth in itself, making it a federal holiday, you know, what that means and what that doesn't mean. And so I guess I'll just focus there on what I think that it means for the government to recognize Juneteenth. And I see good and negative in it. You know, one, I see it as, I'll start with the good, whereas it's a recognition, you know, and that's a beginning to things. And too often, unfortunately, that becomes the end of things. But for now, it's the beginning, and hopefully we can, I want people to try to draw that momentum from that, you know, because it can be frustrating when we've been asking for years and decades for so much more than just recognition. To finally just get recognition, a lot of people are already looking past that and saying, you know, it's time for reparations, and I'm totally on board. But I want to caution folks to just kind of draw in the frustration and channel it into momentum, you know, because this is a victory, you know, for us to at least get recognition, as minimal as it is, as atrocious as it is that it has taken this long to just get that recognition. We got that. And so now it's time to not beat that down, but build upon that, in my personal opinion. And so I want to encourage people to, you know, channel that, not ignore it, but channel that frustration into momentum, and let's build upon this and not end here on Juneteenth. And also want to encourage those of us who are finding out about Juneteenth this year to educate ourselves around it, and that the celebration of Juneteenth shouldn't be one of going out and partying, but one of going out and educating ourselves. I was listening to Angela Davis's audiobook, Freedom is a Continuous Struggle. And in that, she mentioned Du Bois's book about Black Reconstruction. I think that is what I would like listeners to do to celebrate Juneteenth, is find these Black scholars and learn about what all this is. Because, you know, Juneteenth is about how the emancipation happened, and the emancipation did not free the slaves. It only created a strike for those black people who were enslaved in the states that weren't in the Union. So those border states that were in the Union, where there was slavery still, that was still okay. Slavery was still okay. And I think it's important. There's so much there that I don't have time to educate listeners to the whole dynamic of it. And I think it's really important that we go back ourselves and educate ourselves on that.
Yeah, and there is many, many kernels of truth in what you just said, and I will devote myself tomorrow to study. And I hear you. I hadn't thought about it as a day to party, because I know that's what ends up happening on Cesar Chavez Day, and it's horrible.
Exactly.
So thank you for reminding us that that is not what we're doing here. So, Corey Hemphunt, we are coming to the end of this little interview. I wanted to see if you would say a few words about why people should support community radio.
I can't say it enough. You know, it's with so many things in our society in the West, we tend to compartmentalize and just really take things for granted and not really... Like Kanye West said in the song, you know, you never know. They say you never know what you got till it's gone. And I really think that KZFR is a great example of that. It's such a vital resource on so many levels. You know, you tune into these corporate stations and they are beholden to this whole different hierarchy of violence, in my opinion, you know. And you get these public stations where it's volunteer driven with volunteers like yourself, that I'm honored to be on a show with, you know, that we get to listen to you, to your thoughts and be educated to the people who you are privy to that we wouldn't, a lot of us wouldn't be otherwise. You know, there's the musical aspect of bringing in local, giving opportunity to local artists to present their art that they put so much time and effort and energy into. And, you know, the list just goes on. The work that goes into this from the volunteers, I think, is understated, you know. So it's like when we donate, we're not really donating, you know, we're really actually just paying people for the work that they're doing thanklessly, you know. And I personally want to thank all of the volunteers at KZFR who bring us so many different types of priceless content.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think there's something like 80 of us or something. It's amazing
like
that it holds together, that the center holds. And we've had some rough times, but wow, it's something. And I want to ask our listeners to go to the website, kzfr.org. There is a very visible donate button there. It will take you through the process of donating, however you wish to do it. And also there's pledge gifts there, too, if you would like something that, you know, shows your affiliation with KZFR. There's a lot of logo-based things there. And you can also call on this phone number, that's 601-340-KZFR, and that would also be appreciated, especially if you need to talk to somebody. They will call you back if they're not answering it actively right now. And so we've been talking to Corey Hemphunt. He will be on the first Friday of the month in July, so he'll... I don't have a calendar in front of me, but that is coming right up. I've got one more segment to do at the end of the month, and then it'll be Corey. I wanted to thank our underwriters at this point and for Corey to stay with me so that we can keep talking a little bit. The Peace and Social Justice Program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And also Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday night market and the Saturday farmers market. For more information about them, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. I'd also like to thank the next set of underwriters. I'd like to thank Regional and Continuing Education at Chico State, offering online graduate test preparation courses for those seeking an advanced degree in a wide range of fields, including law and business. Sign up for a complimentary strategy session to help you prepare to take the GRE, the GMAT, or LSAT at rce.csuchico.edu. And lastly, a new underwriter here, the Chico Cemetery. Paused by the pandemic, the Chico Cemetery is pleased to announce the return of their historical walking tours. The tour is on January June 26 at 10 a.m. Space is limited and reservations are required. However, there is no charge for the tour. Reservations and information at 530-345-7243. And it's straight up 12 o'clock. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I think I'll read the disclaimer today because you never know what some people will find not so in line with their own thinking. But the opinions voiced on the program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers, just my own and my guests. So, Corey, you wanted to ask me some questions.
Yes, we were, I had a few things. We were at Comanche Park, and you gave me the opportunity to tag along with you, and I actually wanted to pop this up. You actually did not. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but I wanted to give listeners an opportunity to kind of hear your perspective around kind of what you're doing over there. As you're helping bring them some foods and things like that, and helping with that, could you speak to us a little bit about your motivation around that and what you got going on?
Yeah, I feel so hopeless, so hurt by what we're doing to our other people. You know that I cannot stand it, but I also know from past experiences with myself that I can hurt myself by doing too much. I did that during the sweeps. I really hurt my back and my neck, and because I was trying to load people up in trucks to move them because the police were bearing down on us. It was horrible. And anyway, so I tithed myself. One day a week, I build sandwiches. I get snacks together. I have fluids, and I have other items like large plastic bags, hygiene things. Even somebody got me started bringing out some magazines. So anyway, I load them up in my wagon and I go there at lunchtime, and I just get things away. And it's wonderful because I get to know other human beings. It helps my conscience a little bit. And I feel like I can afford it. I'm working 2 days a week. I can afford the outlay of the money that it costs to buy the ingredients. And so it's just what a little thing I can do. And I believe everyone can do that. It isn't any particular act of sainthood or I don't know, privilege or whatever. It's just us. It's just me and us doing what, you know, I mean, it's insane that these people should be living in the dirt, you know, exposed to the elements, right on top of one another, you know, many of them with challenges that I just can't even imagine. So, yeah, anyone can do it. You can do it, folks who are listening, or you can do what my first guest was talking about, support others who are doing it, the DSA group. Juan was talking about prior to this, you can support them at a distance, and that's fine too. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. Just so, well, we need so much more. We need housing, you know. I don't want to say that this is this is curing anything. You know, it's just
it's a mitigation. But yeah, I definitely want, you're very humble, and I definitely wanted to give listeners opportunity to hear about that because I think it's really inspiring. And like you said, I mean, I would push back a little bit and say it is a little bit of a privilege type situation.
Yeah.
But then what you put on top of it was perfect as well. Is like, you know, if you're working so you can't get out there, whatever your situation may be, there is something that you can do, you know, and any little bit helps. It's not the solution, but it mitigates so much. When I was out there with you, it was healing to me to see these people just feel a little cared for, at least in that moment, with so much going on, the constant, you know, abuse that they're enduring and struggle that they're dealing with. You know, it was, I think that's a beautiful thing that you're doing. So I definitely wanted to speak to that.
Thank you.
Another awesome and wonderful thing that you have going is this glass art project. Would you like to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I would. I'm older and I have lung disease. And so during COVID, I was walking up Humboldt Road and I would, for cardiovascular health, I would go up the hill and, you know, huff and puff up the hill. And on the way back, I would pick up these shiny bits of glass all the way back down and bring a bag home every day, wash it. And then I would glue it onto glass frames that I got at thrift stores. And it was just something I was doing during COVID because I was unemployed for over a year. And I just started to notice how beautiful the glass looked, you know. I mean, I didn't feel like it was a me. It was just how glass looks when light shines through it. And so then I gathered it all together, and it's now up at Tin Roof Bakery here in Chico. It'll be up until the 29th of the month, and the art is for sale, and it is a fundraiser for KZFR and Safe Space. Safe Space Winter Shelter is also involved with unhoused people during the summer, too, so it's another way that people can help, and you can get something beautiful. But the reason I wanted Corey to ask me about it is, I think in my kind of contemplations as I'm picking up this glass, of all the people partying, all the people drinking the beer, you know, the vodka, whatever it is. So there's brown and there's green and there's clear and there's blue, and it's all alcohol bottles, right? So all this partying. And then I think about all the my poor brothers and sisters at the creek, and I wanted to just say something, Corey, if it's okay to just keep rambling, about about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And I know it's a leap for people, but this is very near and dear to my heart because I was a public health nurse, and I learned about it, and I think it's one of the most underreported issues. And so about 1 out of 5 people are born exposed to alcohol, and enough that it causes permanent birth defects in the brain, growth impairments, intellectual disability, mental disorders, neuropsychological deficits, sensory impairments. And a lot of the people who are exposed in alcohol end up in through no fault of their own, end up in foster care, juvenile and adult corrections. They say that nearly 1 of every 4 children in juvenile care has fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And in adult corrections, it ranges from 11% to 25%. Among the unhoused, it's hard to imagine how many are, but many birth mothers end up unhoused. Many of their children end up unhoused. And this is a disability. It's not recognized as a disability. People never get diagnosed. But, you know, when they are blamed for being bums, when they are, these are people who are innocents, as far as I'm concerned. And, it is true that about 11.5% of pregnant women report currently drinking. So if any of our listeners are of reproductive age, you need to be very, very careful, you know, not to drink during pregnancy. Anyway, I may be going on too long about this, but I do feel like we as a society need to do better. You know, we don't have any real focus on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and yet it really affects us. It's so expensive to society. It's so disabling to the people who suffer from it. You know, some of the things besides what I mentioned was inept social behavior, which is a hallmark of it, with gullibility and suggestibility. So a lot of times these people commit crimes because other people tell them to. They have co-occurring psychiatric disorders. They self-loathe. They have long histories of failure and rejection, and go through so much depression and suicidality. And it doesn't get better as you get older, you know. You can't see it. You can't see, most people, you can't see it in their face. There is something called fetal alcohol syndrome that you can actually see because it was exposure during the time that the face, you know, formed in utero. And so you can see, you know, some people have fetal alcohol syndrome, but the whole spectrum of the problem, there's no time in pregnancy where drinking is safe, and there's no safe amount of alcohol, but especially binge drinking and heavy, you know, continuous drinking are really, really bad for, you know, causes brain damage in terms of cognitive and communication, impairments in memory, attention, executive functioning, academic skills, adaptive behavior, daily living skills. These folks can't tell time, they can't count money, you know, they can't keep a roof over their heads, you know. It's just the worst tragedy, and so I appreciate this time that you are giving me to be able to talk about that, because I'm so sad about, you know, our failures with our fellow human beings on so many levels, you know, whether it's the, you know, the lack of recognition of the original sin, which is, you know, the colonialism, that, you know, the genocide of indigenous people, slavery, which, you know, walked beside it, you know, what we did to people there, and then into current, you know, the current social injustices of war and everything that we're doing, but right here in our own community, you know, that we treat people so badly. Anyway, sorry, I just ramble. I'm sorry, Corey. Hi.
I am the same way. I'm not, no apologies necessary. It's when you're passionate about something, you got to get it out, and there's so much value in what you're sharing there. You know, I want to piggyback on that idea of alcoholism, man. It's a kicker, and it's all over, and it's something that we all need to look at address in a different fashion, as far as just how we, hey, let's go get some drinks, and, you know, just kind of making it such a central part of our society, when, you know, hey, if you do that here and there, everything in moderation, sure, but, you know, it's something that warrants looking at how we treat drugs, and then how we treat those who utilize and self-medicate and end up in undesirable situations because of it. You know, that doesn't make someone a devil or a negative person because they've made some poor decisions that put them in a terrible living circumstance. It means that we as a society have some work to do. And I appreciate you for the work that you do. It's truly inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate being able to tell people about the art that I've been doing, and this kind of stretch to understand about what that glass meant to me, means to me. The work is, I think it's beautiful. So go buy Tin Roof and maybe purchase some of it, because, like I say, 100% of my 80% that I get is going to go directly to KZFR, our safe space. And I guess we have about 2 minutes left, Corey. Should we talk about KZFR a little more and how folks might help us?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. So I've been doing this show since 1991. I realize this is like a 30th anniversary or something, and we have this Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant, and it, you know, when Rick was general manager, we had fundraisers back to back, and it was so grueling, you know, for volunteers to staff all these fundraisers. And the reason that Rick did it is because of this grant. We were always trying to make enough money besides our pledge drives to get enough money to get the matching funds for this Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant. And it's really important because it really is very key to our operations here. It costs a lot of money for our paid staff and for all this equipment around me that's always needing to be replaced because of those 80 volunteers where we're always breaking it. So anyway, I do hope that people will, you know, will go to the donate tab at the kzfr.org website, and that they'll call that number, which is 601-340-KZFR, and go about 30 seconds on my clock here. Corey, one more thing from you, please, and thank you so much for working with me with us today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to join in on this. And yeah, I totally encourage listeners to do whatever you can to help keep this priceless platform up. There is the archive at the Peace and Social Justice on the KZFR.org site, full of so many priceless interviews. So, I mean, you just get your money back instantly. Also, I was saying that we don't want to party for Juneteenth, but it is a celebration. And so there, you know, everything in moderation, as I was saying previously. So there is that celebration for Juneteenth at the Merriam Park. They'll be showing the Black Panther. And then at Bethel AME, they'll be having a gathering as well. And if you want to do your own personal gathering, Red Food and Red Soda is a commemorative of the resilience and blood of the enslaved.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Corey Hempont, for being with me today and for being my co-host and for just being a good human being. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for being you, Chris, and stay healthy out here.
All right. Peace to you. Bye-bye.
Peace to you.
All right. So, listeners, I'm going to get another interviewer on here, and I really appreciate everybody that's talked so far, including myself, even though I ramble. I think I'll put on a song. Just give me a little more time for the transition. This is John Michael's Son. Here you go.
I can't sit here like a rock. And ignore what's going on. I hear the wild world crying. Something's wrong. What's the price of its defense? How far will I go? What would I give up to save it and leave it all alone?
What a concept, such a wonderful thing, and denied to so many. And I, you know, I appreciate very much the guests I've had on so far. And this next guest is someone who I really admire and love and have known for many, many, many years. And this is Carl Ori. He was elected to the Chico City Council in November 2016, but he had also previously served on the council from 1977 to 1985. He was our mayor back in those days. He was the airport commissioner, the Silver Dollar Fair board member. He helped create the Green Line, which protects the agricultural land toward the river, the 20th Street Community Park, and the Chico Bus System. He helped get the Nature Center built. Carl's had a career in housing development. He's brought millions of dollars to the North Valley and helped over 300 families become owner builders. He's also worked nationwide to help communities build housing that working people can afford. He started his career as director of CAVE, which is a university service organization, and he was the director of the Butte County American Red Cross. He's taught political science part-time at Shasta College and has a master's in public administration from Chico State. Welcome to KZFR, Carl.
Hi, Chris. We're going to have to shorten that resume.
I know.
I have to say, you're a hard act to follow, though. that was a great interview just now.
Yeah, I... Sometimes I just got to spit out my stuff. But, you know, I think you probably have a lot to say. You left the city council in November, and you have seen a terrible spate of characters take over the city. And I just wanted to, I want to hear just raw and unfiltered what your thoughts are on our current leadership at the city council.
You know, I have taken a step backward since November. I'm giving myself time. You know, I think once council meetings open up, I'll be more, you know, I can see, you know, coming forward. I'm actually been more focused on the, and we intend to over the next couple months, the opposition to the silly, expensive recall of Governor Newsom and working on voter registration. And I was going to talk, just because I have stepped back, more about sort of the issues that I see coming up, and I will mention those. But, you know, today's news just drags me back into having to reflect on, you know, what has changed and on the council and why it has changed and what it, you know, this bullying and vigilante efforts that we're seeing. You know, the last 2 years, I think for all of us, have been almost it's been a fog. The trauma of the campfire and 15,000 to 20,000 additional people, many of them facing homelessness, that were renters up there, and just absorbing all of that and what it meant as a very brand new council 2 years ago, a week after our being seated, having to. And then, you know, the lockdown and the pandemic just made it. So I think we have a very uncertain population out there that has led to a rising of dangerous people. You know, we have a council member, good man, who is a naturalist and was taking a 3-month temporary position in Wyoming at Yellowstone Park, and he's arranged flights to come back for each council meeting. He'll be available by email and phone, just like any other employee person who's a council member. And he's been threatened by the local haters, you know. Mm-hmm. So much so that they called his employer. They disclosed his wife's name, and his wife's employer has threatened to, you know, just do massive pressure on the poor man for doing what any of us would do to maintain our livelihood. I mean, I traveled for a living for many years. I'd be gone 2 or 3 nights doing training workshops. I understand that at the sacrifices that people need to do to stay employed. And he just announced an hour ago or so that he's had to turn down this job because of this you know, it just isn't right that we would allow a political group in town to violate a council member and his wife's rights. So having said that, I do think that we are in an interesting situation with this current council. If you look at the last election, and you look at the 3 of the districts that were won by just a majority, a bare majority, and then compare it to the same percentage of those districts that voted for Audrey Denny for Congress, Joe Biden for president, Audrey and President Biden polled about 80% in those 3 districts. And the winners of those districts, the conservatives, you want to call them that, some just straight out vigilantes, barely got 50%. So there's a 25, 30% difference between the, if you would allow me, the liberalism, humanism of the electorate that they supposedly represent taking advantage of this uncertain times. And I don't know how that's going to play out, but it will play out over time. You just can't continue to vote against the wishes of your electorate. And I don't see any willingness to compromise. So it's, you know, I don't want to judge, quick to judgment. We've got a lot of time coming up. There's the special election on September, October, the June primary, and then the November election. So it's, you know, a lot of things need to be considered and people attesting to. But I think, in addition to what we're seeing play out with the homelessness of the fiasco with the cooling center, the federal judge admonition, that's the wrong word, to the city, and, you know, evidence of the very, I want to say poor job the city attorney has done, but on the other hand, he's probably doing an excellent job representing the small-mindedness of the city's homelessness policies. And then the shelter crisis revocation. I mean, that just to turn money back to the state that is precious to these nonprofits that are trying to struggle by and come up with some solutions, it just really does show that there's really no interest. They just would like this issue to go away. But, you know, in addition to the homelessness, I don't want us to lose, especially over the next 2 years, you know, what else is going on. Oftentimes, you know, in closed session, this council is going to, again, redistrict. They're going to change the boundaries. That's their obligation based on the new census data. Yeah. But the difference with this one, this redistricting, is it lasts for 10 years. This is the, you know, after the census one. And so we'll see, perhaps we'll see, as, you know, I'm fully expecting to see changes in lines that benefit the incumbents in the elections that are coming up. And, you know, those need to be understood and challenged if they're going to try to put together a plan that maintains their sort of anti-democratic majorities over 10 years. I'm also would expect to see some very large new developments that would be pushed through while they've got a sympathetic council that are hundreds of acres that, not an exaggeration, that pushes Chico all the way up to Butte Creek Canyon. These kind of proposals are slowly making their way. I think there's other bread and butter issues that most of the community wants us to support. They're not liberal or conservative. They're just doing the right thing for Chico. You know, infrastructure is just as simple, getting a proposal in front of the voters where the money is targeted for local streets and roads and creekways. I don't think, you know, most bicyclists, most motorists in town would fully support finally doing something that would improve, you know, rather than the money going to public safety, but would be going towards, dedicated towards local roads, roads to schools, bicycle routes. And I guess I would finish saying that we're also looking at the junkyard, where this council is the one that, you know, the leadership of this council is the one that 4 years ago, sued me and sued a legal referendum that cost them $200,000 before they lost that suit. And now it's in front of us, them, as whether or not to enforce the neighborhood plan and finally get the junkyard to move into another site in Chico. And that's all under in closed session. That's all being discussed right now in front of judges. So I think we have a lot of issues that, in addition to the homelessness, that I would hope that we keep our eye on the ball and keep this council accountable for the decisions they're making.
I want to thank you, Carl Ori. You've given us the big picture, and I, of course, it's very distressing, but I know I've been hyper-focused on the unhoused, and so all that other stuff is extremely important, and I'm grateful on behalf of our listeners. We have about a minute left. Why do you support community radio?
Well, Chris, you would think that I would say public affairs, programs like yours and Sue's. And you would think I would talk about the importance of communicating during a disaster. Man, to wake up at 2 in the morning and smell that smoke just brought us all back to the importance KZFR was during the campfire disaster of keeping the word out and what was happening that day and the days after. But I have to say that the thing that keeps bringing me back to KZFR is the music. You know, somebody right now should be on the KZFR site and donating just based on public affairs and disaster assistance. I mean, would $50 or $100 to help maintain that kind of, you know, public service be, you know, just sort of a minimal kind of donation? But when you start talking about the music, oh my goodness, the two or three DJs that are close friends, I of course have to donate just to keep them going because of all of what they do. Steve O'Brien and Tim Juste I've known for about, you know, since I've stepped into this town and love their programs. And I've just been really happy with the jazz scene and how it's expanded and broadened. People should support KZFR just for... You know, I gave to Steve O'Brien's program, the Celtic program. I'm going to have to get off the phone and give to your program. And I know when Tim G's program comes up, we have to give another time. But it's, you know, that's why we do this, is because you know, it's 80 people, you know, at least. I was trying to do the math. 4 or 5 programmers a day, 7 days a week, plus multiple shifts. How do you maintain that high level of professionalism, knowledge and passion for their music and their programming week after week? It really is something that I already donated. It's very easy. Just go KZFR. They probably already have your information in PayPal. You just have to push the right button and bang, we keep you guys on the air.
Well, thank you so much, Carl Ori. I really appreciate that. If we do come in number 2 after music, I'm fine with that. Music is, you know, music is the love that, you know, anoints us all. So thank you so much for everything, Carl. Take care.
Thank you. All right. Love you, Chris.
I love you. Bye. All right, folks, I got to get to my next guest. I'm going to put on another pledge request and keep giving. A number of people have given and really appreciate it. I'll read your names at the end of the show and thank you, thank you, thank you. Here we go. Or here we go, trying to go.
This is the COVID Noise Filter Podcast on KZFR in Chicago.
All right, let's go back to John Michael's son, who I really appreciate also. Here we go. Folks, I would like to immediately have Jim Brobeck, the water policy analyst from Aqua Alliance, talk to us, please, Jim, about what's going on in Glenn County with the aquifer, our water aquifer.
Well, I know there's a lot of people in Glenn County that are very concerned about a lot of the shallow wells going dry over there. As of early this month, over 22 wells, no, 40 wells have gone dry. And on the 22nd, the Glenn County supervisors are looking at placing another temporary moratorium on large diameter wells, because there's been a really unwise expansion of irrigated agriculture, primarily for nuts over there in Glenn County. And so that is that's the most immediate impacts we're seeing about this unwise expansion of irrigated agriculture into areas that were previously unirrigated. If shallow aquifers are dropping and stranding all the historic wells that have been used, in some cases, for well over a century. The cumulative impacts of all these large diameter wells is depressurizing the lower aquifer. And with the connections between the lower aquifer and the upper aquifer, it's just sucking the water underground. Even when these large diameter wells are tapping deep, it has an impact all the way to the surface. And the impacts, the cumulative impacts, are occurring all across the valley as aquifer levels year by year dip down. This year, I'm anticipating there's going to be a more drastic decline. And the water purveyors will like to say, well, this is because we didn't get any rain over the year. But they always fail to discuss the increase in demand that keeps occurring year by year by year. And the demand in the Sacramento Valley is exacerbated by the state intention to take what they're calling surplus water from Northern California, from the Sacramento Valley, to attempt to refill some of the dewatered aquifers in the San Joaquin Valley. DWR intends to, and this is a quote, streamline groundwater substitution and water transfer permitting and approval processes and environmental reviews to facilitate water market transactions and to foster and strengthen local and regional water markets and streamline water transfers to optimize the economic value of groundwater. And it's the Sacramento Valley that's the target. It's important to recognize that the majority of the demand is into irrigated agriculture. Oftentimes people think, well, it's the Metropolitan Water District. It's the big cities that are taking it. But it's important to recognize that Los Angeles, for instance, even though it's grown dramatically since the 70s, is using approximately the same amount of water that they were using in the 70s. So their demand has not grown, even though the population has grown. And these urban, the amount of developed water, and I'm not talking about the wild and scenic rivers that often get quantified as environmental uses, but I'm talking about the developed water behind the dams, coming out of the ground, getting sucked out of the delta. 80% of that is going to irrigated agriculture. Only about 15% is going to municipal and industrial uses. Another 5% is going to supply water to wildlife reserves that have been deprived of their natural sources of water.
Yeah, and I would say also that this is for export agriculture. These are usually nut crops that require huge amounts of water, and they don't really, it doesn't, people always talk about the breadbasket, but it's really, it's just for profits. Is that correct?
Well, it is, but I don't want to discredit not only the ambition of real farmers as compared to farming investors that are investing in these huge tracts of land in the San Joaquin Valley, mm-hmm. where the center of nut growing has moved. When I first moved to Chico back in the 70s, I was proud of the fact that Butte County was the capital of the almond growing, or the almond growing capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And it was within rational use. Most of those nuts were being marketed here in California and in the United States. Now 90% of the nuts are being sold overseas, but I don't want to mix in our local nut farmers that have been here for generations with the vast expansion of the export agriculture. And so that's something that I really want to stress and make sure that my agricultural allies know that we are trying, Aqua Alliance is trying to defend the water for local family farms, even the ones growing nuts,
right?
Because they've been here for generations, and they deserve the praise and honor, their ambition to be providing such a valuable food. The problem is the overextension of agriculture,
right,
that has occurred over the past 30, 40 years.
What can we do? What can we do to stop what's happening in Glen Colusa?
Well, we want to focus on some of the most egregious demands on water. For instance, this year, some Sacramento Valley Senior Water Districts are selling their surface water allocations and pumping groundwater to replace foregone river diversions. The Butte Water District, located in southern Butte County, but has land over in the county next to us, has wells in the county next to us that are not under our jurisdiction, so they can engage in about 5,500 acre feet of groundwater pumping as they sell that amount of surface water. The Glen Colusa Irrigation District is selling about 70,000 acre feet of river water and pumping 36,500 acre feet during the next 3 months to supplement the river allocation.
Staggering.
That's about 12 billion gallons of Tuscan aquifer water. And it's a hard to wrap your mind about how much water that is. An acre foot of water is about 326,000 gallons. Seen another way, an acre foot is a football field size tank with 1 foot of water.
Right.
Now imagine a water tank the size of a football field that reaches over 6 miles into the sky. This is about 1.5 times the water Chico uses in the entire year. According to George Barber, the Chico district manager for Cal Water, we are going into this drought with about 30% less usage from our customers than we had in 2013. In other words, like in Los Angeles, the city municipal use has really stepped up, and where we used to be drawing about 31,000 acre feet, We're using a little over 20,000 acre feet right now of water a year. So by replacing lawns with drought-tolerant plants and installing water-efficient appliances, we're doing what needs to be done. But the irrigation districts, anytime they get an advance in efficiency, they expand their demand, either by selling the water or expanding their orchards. Now, keep in mind the GSID pumps that are planning to evacuate about 25,000 acre feet of the total are located on the west side of the Sacramento, about 5 to 10 miles away from Chico. So what can we do? We can challenge it, and this is what Aqua Alliance does in two different ways. In one way, I attend lots of meetings. COVID has really opened the door to me to be able to attend meetings across the North State. And as you probably know, I do not like driving.
Right.
But I've been able to attend these meetings using my computer. And in these meetings, I can educate the other water people where the water is going and what we need to do to conserve it. And also, I'm involved in the Low Soil Sustainable Groundwater Management Act in the Vina Subbasin, which is from about the middle of Butte County up to the Tehama County border, and attempting to get project management actions that will conserve water, that will reduce demand, and that will prevent groundwater banking from occurring here, which will really damage the aquifer, because to make a groundwater bank, you got to suck the water out to create the storage space. And it has the extra disadvantage of privatizing the water under the ground. That would be just hugely damaging to the people and to the environment. But the other thing that Aqua Alliance does is we closely follow the environmental review, and we're on the record as stakeholders, so we can challenge these water exports, these unethical water transfers that are mostly going to the San Joaquin Valley.
Right.
So huge industrial agriculture on the west side.
Right.
We're challenging these in court and making it more difficult for that water to move south, so that they will hopefully, with the help of our colleagues, get these huge investor-owned agricultural water drainers to abandon hundreds of thousands of acre feet of ground that never should have been even tilled for agriculture. It's ground that was viable grazing land, but it's heavily laden with selenium and other alkaline salts, creating terrible drainage problems. So that they're only going to be able to use that land for a matter of one or two decades before it becomes unusable for anything other than maybe solar panels. Mm. So getting by challenging these things in court, Aqua Alliance hopefully is throwing up impediments to the demand on our aquifer up here that's associated with groundwater transfers.
And we've been talking to Jim Brobeck, and I just wanted to spell this for you. Aqua Alliance has one A in the middle. It's one word, aquaalliance.net. And I'm supposed to be fundraising for KZFR, but please help us save the water, support Aqua Alliance, right, Jim? Thank you.
And definitely support the KZFR, because the other radio stations, for some reason, don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. KZFR is the only radio station, perhaps even the only local media outlet, that will discuss the reality of the water demand and the problems associated with it up here. So KZFR is a primary source of information for the public about what we and what other water protectors and salmon protectors are up to.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Okay.
Appreciate you too, Chris. Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, let's go on to our last guest, and as soon as I get her on the line, we can talk about a little bit about all your generosity, which I appreciate very, very much here during the Peace and Justice Show, and I do want you to stay tuned, of course, for playing Dad Ray Lauger will be your host today. Here you go.
This is the COVID Noise Filter Podcast on KZFR in Chico.
That COVID, COVID gets in the way in more ways than one. All right, so I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat a song to you here, but here we go, back to John Michael.
I can't sit here like a rock. And ignore what's going on. I hear the wild world crying, something's wrong. What's the price of its defense?
Sorry to have to cut that off. I don't like doing that, but we are so lucky to have these incredible people on with us today for this silent, not so silent pledge drive. And again, this is Chris, Peace and Justice, going to speak to our last guest, who is someone I've known for a long time and value very much. And Emily Alma, are you on the line?
I am on the line. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, I want to thank some of the people who have given already and hope that more people will give before the end of the show. I'd like to thank Anthony B., Kathleen F., Leslie L., Olivia P., and I think I know who most of those people are, but anyway, thank you to them and to anybody else who has given during this show and during any of the shows, because this is so important to reach this this goal that we have of keeping this Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant. And I know you're a big supporter, Emily. Do you want to, we'll just talk briefly about why you support KZFR and then go on to talking about Concerned Citizens for Justice?
Well, they're connected. It's because KZFR, there is always a platform to talk about things that are important in the community, things that are vital for our community. I feel like this program that I work with, Concerned Citizens for Justice, is one of them, along with Aqua Alliance and the amazing work that they're doing, and Jimmy Brobeck. And we, you know, I can't, there's nowhere else that I just get to talk whenever I want to, or the people that I work with, to be able to present what's going on for us. And it's so important to be able to keep the community involved in what's going on, often behind the scenes, when you know, when the public's busy doing people doing what they do, and we don't get coverage on TV or the other media very often, you know. So that's really valuable. And the great music, you know, it's just, and it takes so much work from so many volunteers like you, Chris, and the hardworking small staff. So yes, I give $100 every pledge drive. That's my commitment, and I encourage people to be really generous with KZFR.
Thank you.
You know, to generous for what works for you.
Yeah, so, thank you. And again, yeah, people can donate by going to the website kzfr.org and click on the donate tab. There are some wonderful pledge drive premiums there too, if you'd like to get a gift from us for your generosity. Or you can call. Grant has been on the line. He's our interim general manager, and you can talk to him. He's also a great reggae programmer. The number is 601-340-KZFR, which is 5937. And so, Emily Alma, I don't want to take too much of your time. I got one more announcement at the very end of the show, but the rest of we've got this little window, very little. Tell us about your current work with Chico Concerned Citizens for Justice.
Well, thank you. Our current work, we don't have anything spectacular going right now. We are, the two main efforts that are happening right now is, one, we have a group of people who are meeting regularly with Chief Madden, and it's delicate. They, you know, there are many of us who feel like pounding the table and saying this has to happen now. Maybe I should first just say who Concerned Citizens for Justice is. We're I guess you'd call us a police reform group, although we want transformation, not just reform. We want a change in culture, and our mission is, I'm sorry, I want to bring it up. I was supposed to have it right in front of me. Here it is. CC4J works to foster a police culture that values the dignity of all citizens, eliminates the use of excessive force, and preserves human life. We are a nonpartisan citizens group, and we're very serious about that police culture that values the dignity of all citizens. We feel that beyond saving lives, that we want police to truly be protectors of humans and not adversaries. So, and right now, Our ultimate goal is to build a citizen oversight, formalized, so that citizens are involved with what happens with police, that we expect transparency and accountability for police actions, that if police are excessive use of force, that it be investigated and that the people know what happens, and if that officers need to be disciplined or fired if they use excessive force, and not just pushed aside and exonerated the way DA Ramsey does over and over and over again. So we formed after the death of Desmond Phillips at the hands of police, and felt that we were making some progress, and then Stephen Vest was killed last October, and that energized us more. And then George Floyd was killed. So those two, Stephen Vest's death and then George Floyd's death, has really activated us, and we formed a pretty powerful action plan. And right now, what we're trying to do is build a coalition of community members to show that this is not something that just a handful of people. There's probably about 20 of us who meet regularly, and we have another 250 people in a coalition at this point, and we want to build it more. We want the coalition to, and this is just people who say, yes, you can add my name, that I support this work. I also agree with your mission, that, and we need to save lives in Chico. So that's one of the things we're doing actively right now, is working on building the coalition. If people are interested in that, you can go to our website. We have a beautiful website, and it's ccforjchico.org. And there is a place where you can click on learning about the coalition and being in touch to sign up or just to learn more about it. We also have lots of other things that people can do to help.
And lots of things to read too. I really appreciate your work, but we're running out of time, and I was wondering.
Oh my God!
Well, I know it was really fast. So, if you could look up on your phone the Juneteenth announcement, I don't have that in front of me. I just want to mention to our listeners that it is still Pride Month, and there are some great things going on. There's brunch kits and cook along from the through the 20th. There's a drag story time on the 23rd. There's a pop-up fair and festival on the 26th. There's a teen dance silent disco on the 26th. And a queer variety channel showcase on the 27th. This is the pick up the paper copy of the Chico News and Review. And you can see all the details or go to Stonewall Alliance, StonewallChico.com for more information. Emily, do you find that?
Yes.
Okay, can you read it?
And the Juneteenth, this is really exciting. It's the first Juneteenth that is a national holiday agreed to just yesterday. And today, federal workers have off from work honoring Juneteenth,
right,
which is the first day that the people in the slaves in Texas found out that they were freed. And that was 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah.
And 2 months after the end of the Civil War.
Yeah, let me have you hurry up and read the announcement, because playing dead's about to start. Go ahead. And thank you. Thank
you. All right. So Juneteenth in Chico is going to be celebrated tonight at Merriam Park. You can view Black Panther at the drive-in tomorrow from 11 to 3 at the AME Church on Linden Street, right off 9th, and from 11 to 2 on Sunday at the AME Church. And tomorrow from 12 to 1, there is going to be a program. There's going to be things going on the whole time, both days. CC4J will have a table there tomorrow, I'm very excited about that. This is sponsored by Black in Butte, which is a fairly new organization. I'm looking forward to meeting some of those folks.
Great. Thank you so much, Emily Alma, for your time and for your work. We appreciate you.
Okay.
All right.
Let me say one more time, ccforjchico.org, if people want to learn more about Concerned Citizens for Justice.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. The end of a wonderful Peace and Justice show, if I don't say so myself. I want to thank Payroll Plus. Owner Dolly Wendell and her staff perform payroll, workers' comp, group health insurance, employee benefits, and human resource management services consistent with ever-changing employee compliance and tax laws. Dolly at Payroll Plus can be reached at 566-0452. And also Robert Amendola and Associates, a law corporation providing legal representation for accident victims of any kind. Robert Amendola and Associates can be contacted at 916-924-8787. Hmong translating available at 916-599-0000.
0039 and just ask for Mr. Yang. I'm going to go ahead and put on the community calendar so Ray Lager can get in and get us going with a great afternoon of playing dead. Peace and gratitude. Thank you so much to everybody who pledged during this program. Here we go.
Hey, listeners. It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. This week, Inspire School of the Arts is presenting Alice in Wonderland, designed for audiences of all ages, held in the Inspire Campus Quad. This will be an outdoor picnic-style show with blanket areas being socially distanced and will be following county COVID-19 guidelines. Matinee performances will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday the 15th, Wednesday the 16th, and Saturday the 19th. The evening showings will be held at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m.